ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us. How to acquire bhakti or devotion? Swami Vivekananda had taken the means indicated by a great Indian teacher called Ramanujacharya. And there are seven such means. As we had discussed, in every religion, it is the same process. Process of purification. And why should we purify ourselves? Why can't we just sit, close our eyes, and go on thinking of God? As I said, what is God? The name for everything is called God. The whole universe, the whole creation, and ourselves, and God. These three things, when they become unified, then that is called God. If we have to realize God, then there should be no distinction between ourselves, between the world, and between God. So, in order to achieve this harmony, unity, we will have to practice mental purification. So this purification of the mind involves three things. First of all, it makes the instrument absolutely pure. Secondly, it achieves harmony, unity with everything. And through these means, it also achieves complete identity with the God. Interestingly, you know, according to the path of knowledge, those who tread the path of knowledge from the very beginning say, I become one with God. Aham Brahmasmi, I am God. But there is a misunderstanding among devotees that I do not want to be one with God. But that is only a very preliminary stage because we feel we are separate from everything. Naturally we feel we would be separate from God also. Even according to the path of knowledge, according to the path of devotion, there are four types of liberation or achieving the goal. In a way of speaking, there are four steps. A lower step, next higher step, and last step. This is called Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya, Sayujya. What are these four? The first, when a person acquires the tremendous love for God, he lives as it were in the same world as his God, as his chosen deity. Say for example, the devotee of Ramakrishna, if his devotion is sufficient, he goes and lives in the world of Ramakrishna. Ramakrishna Loka. The devotee of Vishnu goes to Vaikuntha. The devotee of Shiva goes to Kailasa. The devotee of a Christian devotee goes to Kingdom of Heaven. These are different names. But he lives at a long distance from God. As it were, he lives in a remote village and God is living in the capital in a hugely crumbling, in a hugely protected building. But he knows that I am very safe. I am in the same world as God lives. When his devotion increases a little, then he naturally imitates his chosen deity. He dresses like his chosen deity. You know, imitation is the sincerest form of admiration, not flattery. Admiration. See, it could be also hypocrisy. You know, every humble politician in India puts on Gandhi cap. you will not understand it. He wants to cheat you. I know I am a Gandhian. I am like Mahatma Gandhi. You can trust me. So you can vote for me. And after you vote, then I will see what I am going to do with you. So, sarupya, of the same form. How do we know it is the same form? Remember the incident in the life of Sri Ramakrishna? He wanted to have the vision of Rama. What did he do? He meditated upon Hanuman. And what did he become? Hanuman-like. Even he grew a tail. And he meditated upon Radha when he wanted to have the vision of Krishna. And his movements, his face, everything became like Radha. So you see, because intense thinking makes us alike on the object what we are thinking, even not to speak of mentally, but even physically, physiologically, our very body changes. And that's a wonderful thing. Because it has both sides, good side and bad side, but we can take only the good side. And we can see that if we intensely think of our Ishta Devata, we become like that. Apart from the body becoming like that, just imagine, what does the devotee go on thinking? He goes on thinking about the divine qualities, guna dhyana, and his face, his appearance, his thinking, his habits, everything becomes as it were of the object on which he is meditating. That is called sarupya. Then as his love for his chosen deity increases, he goes on going very near. As though just he is standing absolutely next to him. This is called samipya, shomipa. Then lastly, when his devotion becomes perfect, there is nothing to distinguish him from the other one. Absolutely they become one. This is called sayujya. These are not stages that are to be attained after death, post-mortem stages. They can be achieved right now. And we are all doing that. You know, just now the example came to me, that how many people go on cutting their hair in a peculiar ways. I don't know, nowadays probably monastic members have become great celebrities. People go on shaving, put on orange cloths and all those things, you will see. So our habits, our very physical body, everything changes. So how to achieve that devotion to God? You go on imitating what these great souls have done. Take as an example Sri Ramakrishna's life. What did he do when he wanted to have tremendous devotion for mother? He wanted to have the vision of the mother. How can one have a vision of the mother? By having intense devotion. Now incidentally, I told many times, but I will tell also many times more, having a vision doesn't mean seeing something. I am seeing you. You don't call it vision, isn't it? But suddenly, at midnight, I appear in your, you know, house like that. Then what? And then disappear after a second. What do you call it? Vision. Don't get frightened. I'm not going to do that. What is a vision? Vision is to become similar to the object we are meditating upon. If Sri Ramakrishna wanted to have, he is not wanting to see the mother, some woman, however divine she may be, in front of him or something like that. What did he want? He wanted to be like her. See, these are mystical things we have to understand. Surrendering our will to the God's will. What does it mean? There is no difference between one and the other. Shokali Tumari Chadat song we sing. So you see, to have the vision of God means to become one upon which we are trying to meditate. And how do we do that? When our love becomes so intense, we think nothing else other than what we want to achieve or become. That is the way. So love means what? Again, we have to be very clear. Many of us identify love with emotion. I love you. How do you know? I am very happy when I see you. And when I am not happy, what do I do? What is your conclusion? I don't love you. Is it not? That's not love. Love means I and you. There is no difference. Complete identification. That knowledge is called love. Take an ordinary example. A mother loves her baby very much, which means there is no difference between the mother and the baby. The mother is prepared to give up her life if necessary for the sake of the baby, is it not? That shows complete identity. Love means thinking intensely, so much so that there would be no idea I am different from the other. That is called real love, that knowledge. I feel no difference from my chosen deity. That is called real bhakti or devotion. In order to achieve that, naturally, the mind should not think of anything else. This purification of the mind really means that I will not think of anything else. First of all, as I mentioned, it is to make this body and the mind proper instruments, fitting instruments. This process of purification has two parts, even in ordinary things. For example, you have a car and you want to go a long distance. What do you do? Take to a servicing. Say, take for servicing. What does servicing mean? If there are any defects, he will rectify those defects. And then, if something has to be done to make the car a very fit instrument, you know, putting air in the tires and seeing that every part is working properly, optimum working conditions, that is called servicing. Same thing applies here also. One, remove all the defects. Second, that make it such a fitting instrument that will fulfill our purpose. So, in this process, there are seven steps or seven things that can help us. Not one thing, but seven things. Last class, we discussed one particular step. What was that? Viveka. Viveka means discrimination about food. Food means not only the physical food that we eat, but whatever we take in through our five sense organs. It must be free from impurities. It must be just the right food, and we should be able to digest it and make it ours. The second step is called Vimoka. What is Vimoka? Kaman anabhishvangaha, according to Ramanuja, that is the definition given. That is, controlling the passions is the next thing to be attended to. This is also to restrain the organs, sense organs, from going towards the objects of the senses, to control them and to bring them under the guidance of the will, is the very central virtue in religious culture. Then only comes the practice of self-restraint and self-denial. All the immense possibilities of divine realization in the soul cannot get actualized without struggle and without such practice on the part of the aspiring devotee. This is the second step. In this step, again, there are three parts. The first part is, do not allow the senses to run towards the objects which are likely to pull us down. See, many times our problem is, if suppose a man comes with a gun pointing at you and ready to discharge the gun, it doesn't need a lot of cleverness to say that I have to run away from this person. But if a person comes with a nice rasagulla, come on, I will give it to you, eat. Can you recognize that what does this person want to do? There are beautiful stories illustrating this. You know, this Panchatantra stories. So there was a village and there was a tiger nearby forest. It became old, so it could not easily catch its prey. It was becoming starved. So it wanted to get some food. So it saw one day a Brahmin was coming near. There was a river, and then this tiger saw, I have to trap this person. So the tiger entered into the river and appeared, it has collapsed. And fortunately for the tiger, and from earlier killings, it got a golden bangle. So it sat down in the river with this golden bangle hanging. A Brahmin was passing that way. He saw the tiger, he wanted to run away. But the tiger said, sir, now I have become a religious tiger.
I don't do any harm. Don't you see? I have become a Vedanti. All my teeth have fallen off. The Brahmin was not even trusting it. Then it showed up. You see this golden bangle? Please come near. He didn't want to come. It showed the golden bangle. My only purpose of calling you, that before I breathe my last, I want to donate this to a worthy Brahmin. And I don't see anybody worthier than you here. So the fellow, you know, he understood that the tiger could, even an old tiger could be very dangerous tiger. But then the greed for that golden bangle made him go near. So the tiger was with uplifted, you know, eyes, yogi's eyes. It was waiting there. As soon as he came near, it caught hold of him and ate him up. What is the point? It's extremely difficult for us to stop ourselves going near the objects which tempt us. We know in our heart of hearts this could be dangerous. And yet you know, just a little, just a little. And how just a little of this will lead us into bigger trouble. I think I told you a real incident from the life of my predecessor, Swami Bhavyanandaji. He was at Vrindavan. And there was a South Indian Swami who was very good, holy man, monk. He used to, now an outsider, not our order Swami. Now and then he used to come to the Vrindavan hospital. And because he was such a good man, the other monks of our center used to invite him for lunch whenever he came. So on one such occasion, when he was eating, he mentioned, you see, I have a friend at Delhi and I want to go and see him and I do not have money. Could you lend me 2 rupees? I will, for buying the train tickets. And when I reach my friend, he will give me back the money. I will give it back to you. So all the sadhus collected little bits of money. Just imagine 2 rupees he went to collect. 1940s, of course. They gave it to him. And he went, bade them goodbye, went. And he went, there is a station called Mathura, you know, very near to Vrindavan. Went to Mathura. The train was at night. He bought the ticket, which was about 12 anas in those days. Still, 1 rupee, 4 anas is there. And he thought, I have not eaten sweets for a... Oh no, he went to have darshan of the Lord in the temple. You know, outside the temple, all the sweetmeat shops would be there. So he said, I would just eat a little bit. I haven't eaten sweets for a long time. And I would just eat little. So he took out 1 anna, which is like, you know, a few pennies, and then bought a little bit of sweet. Now that acted like, you know, a hook. But only a little bit more. And he gave out another one. In no time, all this, you know, 1 rupee, 4 anna sweets he had eaten. And they are the dirtiest, most disease-ridden sweets there. All dust and dirt and all that. That's what makes the sweets so very attractive. So this man ate those sweets within 1.5 hours, started purging. And then it became more and more. Ultimately, he fell down at the roadside and he was unconscious. Fortunately for him, there was a horse carriage man who used to come to work in Mathura but live at Vrindavan. So he saw this holy, saw a monk. He took pity upon him. He knew our mission is having a hospital there. So he put him in the cart and then brought him at about midnight. The sadhu was brought. There was a knock at the door of Swami Bhavyananda. He was the local doctor at that time. And there is an emergency case. He went and he was shocked to find that was the monk who took the money from them and went away. So they had to give that what's called drips. And then next day he recovered consciousness. He was all right. Then they asked, what happened? He said, you know, I haven't eaten sweets for a long time. I just thought I will eat only little. But as soon as I ate little, my appetite had become larger. And I went on eating until this is what happened. So whenever we become slack in our mind and say, only just, I will watch the TV only for 5 minutes. And by the time you put it off, you know what will, you know, everything is like that. This Narada, who is a great teacher of devotion, He says, even though these troubles start like small wavelets, but when they go on adding one after the other, in course of time they become like a big storm wave, huge wave, which will drown even a big ship underneath. Or Shankara, to quote Shankara in Viveka Chudamani, when we enjoy something and our mind becomes absolutely slack, loses control, and like a beautiful ball, you have thrown the ball at the top of a staircase. How does it come down? Dancing and dancing, and you know, it touches the lower and then flips up, then touches the lower step and then flips up until it finds itself at the very bottom. Sri Ramakrishna is to give, you know, there is a place, Maidan, and it is a very slopey area. Said when the carriage was coming down from that slope, I could not find, it appeared as though it is, you know, only little bit of slope. My God, when I looked back, how many feet high it was. So the tendency of the mind is, whenever we allow our mind to go to enjoy something, then immediately that Mahamaya will catch us. And little leads to still more, and still more, and still more, until we are completely pulled off balance. That is how we are trapped. This is, you know, how people trap animals? Rats, you know how rats? A big piece of cheese will be inside the trap. A small piece of cheese would be outside the trap. What happens? The rat comes attracted by the smell of the cheese and it eats the small bit which is outside. That eating of the small bit increases its appetite so enormously, it doesn't care for anything. Simply it will rush inside the trap and be caught. So, the first thing is called pratyahara, the ability to withdraw the senses. No, I do not want to see it. This time is over. I don't want to enjoy. I don't want to hear anything. It needs tremendous amount of willpower, discipline to do that. You know, while talking, suppose you are in the habit of meditating at a particular time, say 6 o'clock. Somebody, some neighbor comes, friend comes, you couldn't say no. And then they come 5 o'clock and you start talking. It is 5:55. And then you think, I will just talk for 5 minutes and then I will take bed goodbye and then I will go. But when it comes 6 o'clock, I will just talk for another 5 minutes. I will just talk for another 5 minutes. By the time you know, it will be past your meditation time. Has it not happened to you many times? We have to be completely disciplined and say 5:55, look, this is my habit. Sorry about it. I have to go now. Even our Swamis do not observe all the time this kind of observance. There was one Swami, Swami Madhavanandaji. Probably you must have heard, Holy Mother's disciple. He was well known for his discipline. By seeing at what time the light, suppose you don't have a watch in the evening time, you want to know what time it is. You know approximately it is about 6, but you don't know what correct time. Go on look, watching at his window. The moment his light goes up, say it is 6 o'clock in the evening. Not 1 second before, not 1 second after. That may be an extreme case, but we need that kind of discipline. So the first thing is to restrain the organs from going towards the objects of the senses. What is the way to do it? We have to be frank. We do not have that much self-control. The best way is not to go towards those objects at all. That is why Buddhist monks are said, you have only to look 3 feet in front of your feet. You cannot look beyond that, let alone looking here and there. Nuns, monks, they are all supposed to be disciplined like that. But don't do that while driving. So that is the first step. The second part is that to control them. So even sometimes it is necessary, we are living in the world, even if we come into contact with the objects of the senses, just have some kind of control, restrain them. The third step would be, bring them under your willpower in the sense, what is the problem? Problem is not the sense of sense organs. Problem is our desires. When we don't have desires, What can the sense organs do? So the third step is a very positive step. What is it? I will employ my sense organs only to see God, only to hear about God, only to smell God, only to taste God. How do we taste God? You cut a piece of him and then eat. Prasada. This is called prasada. When you offer something, sweets or fruits, it becomes part of God. Then you eat it. You cannot cut him apart because he is infinite. But he can be in every bit that has been offered to him. That is the idea. So you be in touch with him. These very sense organs, employ them so that they will only be aware of God and nothing else. That is called directing all the sense organs towards God. This question very often comes to us. Once, one of the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, he put a question. He was a young man. How can I control lust? Swami Turiyananda. And he was expecting an answer, you know. No, don't read bad things, don't talk about bad things, don't look at bad things. Ramakrishna didn't say that. What did he say? You increase your lust a millionfold, but direct it towards God. How can you control anger? Don't control anger. You increase your anger, but direct it towards those things which obstruct your spiritual progress. Don't control your greediness. Increase your greediness. But say, what is worthy of my acquiring? Only God is worthy. Everything else is only a trash. But it is not possible for us to do that. That's why these three steps have to come. First, do not allow the sense organs to go. And next, even if we have to go to some extent, have control over them. And lastly, direct all those things towards God. Now there is a discipline called tantric discipline. Tantras, you must have heard. According to tantras, there are three types of worship. It is called Pashu and Vera and Daivi. Pashu means animal. That is why Lord Shiva is called Pashupati, Lord of the animals. He always moves with animals. What does he ride upon? A bull. What does he put upon his body? Snake. These are symbolic. We are all like snakes. We are all like bulls. What is the bull? Bull is a symbol of ahankara. Terrible ahankara. Stubborn ahankara. Or Mahishasura. And what is the symbolism of snake? Perfect control over the mind. Kundalini Shakti. Kundalini is always, you know, symbolized in Indian religion as a snake, coiled up snake. He is the master. He rides the bull. And this snake, instead of being a poisonous thing, dangerous thing, it becomes a beautiful ornament in his hands because he has perfect control. So that's why he is called Pashupati, Lord of the animals. When we are in the state of Pashus, that means we have no control over our mind, then the scriptures tell, don't go anywhere near the objects of temptations. When we somehow purify ourselves to some extent, then we are allowed. The second stage is called the heroic sadhana. Those very objects which have the tendency of pulling us down, you have to confront them. Because you see, one is you are away, you close your eyes, but always you can't close your eyes. That doesn't show self-control. You open your eyes, see it. And if you can face them and not fall under temptation, then you are really hero. Hero means, you know, Vira. It is a Sanskrit term, turned back. Vira has become Hira. Hero. Hero means one with the tremendous power over himself. Power, very strong man. So for them, the very objects which the lower aspirant has been avoiding, this deliberately you confront. And then this panchamakaras they call, you know, confront them. Test yourself. And if he has really done the first part, then next part will not be that difficult. And when he has had progressed so much, then comes Divya stage. Divya means divine. He is no longer not tempted by any of these things, those very objects would remind him of God. For example, Sri Ramakrishna used to say, in tantric practices there is a word called karana. You know what is karana? So the Sanskrit name for karana is somarasa, wine, alcohol. So karana means, if the moment he used to hear that word wine, karana, he used to be intoxicated. Why do people have wine? They want to be intoxicated by drinking. So what is this here? This person is getting so much intoxicated by drinking the nectar of the divine name. Ami shurapan korine joikali bole shudha rosh khai. See, I do not drink ordinary wine. I drink the name of the divine name and get intoxicated. Sri Ramakrishna used to sing that song. That is the stage of the divinity. Those very objects, they only remind us of God. So this is what Ramanujacharya said, vimokha, absolutely controlling the passions and then directing all those passions towards God. That is called bhakti. You see, we are all slaves to emotions, passions, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya. And if we run away, then all this energy will be going to waste. In spiritual practice, what do? We gather these very passions, but direct them towards God. That is the only way we can ever become bhaktas or devotees. How do that? Is it so easy to do that? So the third part is abhyasa. The most frequently asked question is, how can I control my mind? You know, the word for mind in Sanskrit, in Bengali, is called mon. My teacher, Swami Yatheswarananda, people used to come to him and ask, how can I control my mind? Mon. So he said, first, have you got a mind? Mon. Mon means here, you see, another meaning is, mon means 40 kg. It's a weight, it's a heavy weight. Have you got really, are you really 40 kg worth? Or only this one chatak worth, 1 gram worth? Have you got a mind? What type of mind is that? Have you got any power? You know, if you are traveling, have you ever seen in India, they use this ox cart, bullocks draw the cart. Have you seen any brake on that bullock cart? When you are having bullock cart, you don't need a brake. But when you have a car which is traveling at 60-70 mile speed, then you need a brake. This kind of mind, it doesn't need a brake now. Now, improve. But through discipline, through daily practice. So what is the way to control this mind? So this is the common question in every religion, by every aspirant, in every age. And there are only two answers are there. Whatever be the religion, whatever be the country, whatever be the time. What is that? Abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha grihyate. The first thing is abhyasa. Try to control, practice spiritual disciplines again and again and again and again. How long? Until you are able to do it without effort. Second, without dispassion. It is not, mere practice will not do. Practice, we are all doing it. We are all doing japa, meditation for years and years and years. But why does the mind not control? Because dispassion is not there. You are terribly interested in many other things. That will not do. Slowly develop that dispassion. Dispassion means what? Not lethargy. Not energylessness. You see, I am not interested in cars. So, even if you talk about, you know, Mercedes-Benz or F1 Formula car, I am not interested. That is not dispassion. What is a deaf fellow? You try to make him listen to Beethoven's symphonies. Do you think he will be interested? What is it? I must have the capacity and yet I should not be interested in it. That is called dispassionateness. With full awareness we should face the problem and try to sublimate those feelings. Dispassion is very important. So, that is the way to slowly improve. And Sri Ramakrishna used to say, there is nothing that cannot be achieved through practice. And Hindus, they have, they believe in rebirth. You know, our religious beliefs have a tremendous power, either to encourage us or discourage us. In the West, many people do not believe in rebirth. So what is the result? Suppose there is a person, he wants to be a musician, and his voice is croaky voice. You know, one of our Swamis. And he was tremendously interested in singing. And he wants to sing. And he learnt a little bit of singing. Every time something, some celebration comes, he wants to sing. So he went one, but he was never allowed because, you know, he was not at all good singer, bad singer. So once he went on a celebration day to the head of this, I want to sing. So Swami said, you be ready. At 12 o'clock, let everything be over. And if there is any shortcoming of prasada to be distributed, I will ask you to come and sing. Because people will run away after singing, maybe there will be enough prasada to be distributed. But Hindus, they have this idea that if you cannot become a good singer in this life, don't give up. Because you go on practicing it, and this desire, this self-discipline, this practice, will next birth, you will be born with a better instrument, better voice, better stamina, better environment, everything. That is how every greatness is achieved, slowly, slowly. Not in one life, in many, many lives. But if you don't believe in rebirth, then there is going to be a problem because, oh, I can never become. And then what happens? You will become discouraged. Same thing, in this Bhagavad Gita we get this question. Oh Lord, yes, you are asking me to practice spiritual disciplines. Suppose I go on doing it. Suppose I cannot achieve the goal. Then I will lose this worldly enjoyment. I will lose God also. Ito bhrashtaha tato nashtaha. He said, no. When you will be reborn again, and you will exactly start where you left it off, and you, in course of time, you will reach it. Otherwise, there is no hope for most of us. We have to be what is called disappointed in many, many areas of life. But there is no such thing, no need to be disappointed, because the law of karma is inexorable. You do some good, the result will come. May not be now, maybe later, maybe next life. What does it matter? It will come. There is no power on earth which can stop it. That is why it's a wonderful doctrine to believe. Law of karma. Never get disappointed. There is nothing called failure. What is a failure? You need one more attempt. That is what is called failure. You learn also from your failures. All greatness is achieved only through failures. Do you know that? There was a great scientist called Edison. He was trying to discover this, you know, light filament. 10,000 experiments have been done over the number of several years. Nothing came to good result. Nothing brought good result. His assistants were completely disappointed, frustrated. So they said, sir, we have done 10,000 experiments and we didn't get the result. Let us give up this project. He said, no. Now we know 10,000 ways how it will not work. Let us find out how it is going to work. And in a short time, they found out the light filament, and even now we are using the same thing. So, a great man never gives up hope. That is one of the most important things. Go on practicing, and the result must come. You know, there was a fellow who was suffering from cold, and he started coughing. So he went to a doctor, and he took medicine. After 3 weeks also, he was still coughing. So he went back to the doctor. And the doctor heard him coughing. And he said, your cough now sounds much better. The patient said, of course it should sound better. I have been practicing it for 3 weeks. You see, even a bad singer, bad speaker, if he goes on practicing enough, with sincerely prayer and awareness and the right methods, he will have to succeed. There is nothing called failure. It is only failure is only a delayed success. That's all. And sometimes it is very good to fail also, because it will give us a lot of time. And some of the spiritual aspirants pray for failure. Do you know that? There was one direct disciple, and he was appearing for a college, studying. And his parents told him that if you, as soon as you pass, we will get you a beautiful bride and get you married. And he never wanted to marry. He was praying, God, make me fail this examination. And he did fail. And he became one of the greatest spiritual personalities, Swami Premananda. So, abhyasa, always keep it in mind, this is spiritual practice. Abhyasa means repeatedly practicing it. How long? As long as we haven't achieved the goal. No frustration, no disappointment, no looking back. Go on doing it. That's it. Then comes kriya. This is a most wonderful thing. Many Western philosophers bring the charge that Indian religions are lacking in what is called ethics. They don't care for service of humanity. Here you see what he says, Ramanujacharya, without first getting rid of our obligations, it is impossible to progress in spiritual life. One of the most important of these spiritual practices is called kriya. What is kriya? There is no English translation for this. I will have to explain it. Every Hindu is obliged to perform 5 kinds of sacrifices. These are called Pancha Maha Yajna, especially the householders. What is the meaning of this? By our very birth, by our very living, we are indebted to 5 types of creatures. First, we are indebted to our rishis, ancient people, because of their knowledge, because of their sacrifices. We are what we are now. So, our rishi means a discoverer of truth. And it could be a scientific rishi. In ancient India, people didn't make a distinction between secular knowledge and spiritual knowledge. A discoverer of mathematical truth is also a rishi. A discoverer of medical knowledge is also a rishi. You know, Sushruta and all the Charaka and Aryabhatta, you know Aryabhatta. And all these people are Narada. Not this Narada, who is a teacher of devotion, but the teacher of dancing. Bharata, Bharatanatya you call it, Bharata Rishi. So all these great sages, it is in their field they are great. And they have passed on their discoveries to us without taking copyright. Nowadays everybody copyrights, you know. You know, it's intellectual rights they call it. And then that is why all these hackers, they go on hacking, you know, all the MP3, all these movies you can download. And if there is one person who puts on DMS, what is it called? Rights. And then another person takes away that one, you can freely copy everything. What is that? God has given you knowledge. It should be given back to people. And what will happen to me if I lose this? Nothing happened. God will give you, look after you. Everybody's need will be met. Not even one person's greed. So, this kriya means that we must perform these 5 sacrifices. First, we are indebted to the sages. This is called Rishi Yajna. How do we get rid of it? Whatever we knowledge helped us, let us pass it on to others. Second, we are indebted to our ancestors. After all, their genes are, you know, flowing in our bodies. Our great grandfather and all those. We are what we are because of them. Let us worship them. Let us revere them. Let us look upon them. You know, Indians have got what is called offering every year. Shraddha, Pindadana, etc. The idea is here also, once in a year, they go to the crematoriums and offer some flowers, etc. It is to show respect that it is because of you that I exist today. It's a reverence. All this has only one meaning. Develop reverence for everything. Reverence for everything. Then the third, we are also indebted to gods. Many people nowadays don't believe gods and goddesses. But Hindus are supposed to believe that there is a rain god, there is a fire god, there is a wind god, there is a harvest god, there is a garden god, there is a plant god. There is a mountain god, there is a river god or goddess. Is it true? Yes, it is true. You know, Swami Vijnanananda, one of the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna had wonderful reverence for Ganges. And he never used to allow people to dirty the water in any way. They can use it, but not dirty it. So Swami Vijnanananda, Hari, and he said, oh, Sri Ramakrishna is an old sentimental man. Because he had been taught, he had this kind of this thing. Then later on he said, one day I was sitting at Allahabad, on the banks of the Ganga. I saw really this goddess with three jata, what do you call, you know, her woman braids, no, three braids. And she was flowing in the river. Then I realized what Sri Ramakrishna said was not just a figment of imagination. It is very true. You know, there are so many realities which nowadays we don't believe. There are gods, there are goddesses, there are malevolent, you know, spirits which can do harm. Not that they will do. There are few which can do harm. All this is true. What we do not see, we should never say they do not exist. They are all there. The point is that we are indebted to these gods. What we are enjoying today is because of their blessings. How do we get rid of their debt? By offering them their due. That is why every day you say, Brahmarpanam you say, and you pray to them, oh Lord, please be gracious. They don't want your things. They are giving after. But they want that this person is grateful to us. They will be pleased. Whatever we get, we must offer. And Hindus, I don't know here what they do. If they plant anything, some fruit tree or something, the first fruit must be given to God. So they put it, tie it with a red cloth or something, yellow cloth, so that others will know this is reserved for offering to God. This is a wonderful habit, to be grateful to the gods. Then comes, we are all very much dependent upon other human beings. We do not realize we have come on with nice shoes. Do we know where these shoes are made? Maybe somewhere a poor man in Hong Kong is working 14 hours a day under horrendous conditions so that we can enjoy it today here. It is not that you pay a little money. Where does that money go? Does it go to that poor man? Most of it goes to the middleman. So at least the least we can do is that the people who are surrounding us, if they are in need, whatever we can do, let us do it. That is how we discharge the debt to fellow human beings. So it could be even a sweet word. It could be just a smile. If we cannot, but smiling, you know. There was a government announcement. You must pay your taxes with a smile. So one man said, I tried it, but they didn't accept it. You can't pay a smile. What it means is be happy. You are paying your taxes. Not just merely smile. What do you lose by smiling? What it is a pleasant thing. We all like people when they smile at us, is it not? So others also will like when we smile at them. So try to help as much as you can. If you cannot help, then you pray for them. Holy Mother used to say, Jar ache, maapo. Jar nahi, jopo. It's a beautiful Bengali phrase which means if you have something to give, you give. If you don't have anything to give, then you pray to God on their behalf. What do you lose? This is how we discharge the debts to our fellow human beings. This is called Nriyagna or Narayagna. Not only human beings. We are dependent upon everything non-human. Animals, plants, mountains, rivers. Therefore, we must be very careful. If you see some stray animal suffering, try to help it. If you see a plant, don't harm it. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, you know, if you break the branch of something, as though you have broken a part of my body, because they identify themselves so much. He is not saying you don't eat the fruits, you don't cut the branches. Whatever is needed for your survival, you do that. That is permitted. But anything beyond that, it is hurting them. Plants have tremendous sensitivity, you know. That was the greatest discovery of Sir Jagadish Chandra Bose. Plants can respond to you. They can hear you. They can talk to you. If you talk to them, they will be very happy. But don't talk too much to them. They also feel hurt. You know, there was an American lady who heard that talking to plants is very good. So she took it so seriously. Day and night she started going to the plants and then talking to them. One day she was absent. Her husband went to the plants, said, "How could you be here? So much talking." They said, "Who listens?" So the idea is, there is nothing where divine is not manifesting. Even the so-called non-living, we don't believe it. Does a stone has divinity in it? Sri Ramakrishna said, one day I was walking on the banks of the Ganga, I saw a stone jumping and following me. He said, I didn't believe it. It must be my hallucination. I rubbed my eyes, looked at it. When I stopped, it stopped. When I started walking, it started following me. Everything is alive. That is called Brahman consciousness. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. You can't exclude and say this is a rock, this is mud, and this is only water, this is only a star, this is only a planet. They have no life. No. Everything is potentially there. Life is potentially there. So we have to reverence every plant, every mountain, every river, anything that helps us is we have to reverence. The idea is develop reverence for everything. What is reverence? See, that is witnessing the manifestation of divinity in everything. When we have God vision or vision of Brahman, that's what happens. There will be nothing which is not divine. There is no division as living or non-living. That is the idea. This is called Kriya. Then Kalyana. Kalyana means we must live certain way of life which will be very highly conducive for our becoming devotees. And among these, according to Ramanujacharya, in the list of qualities conducive to purity, as given by Ramanuja, these are enumerated: satya, truthfulness; arjava, sincerity; daya, doing good to others without any gain to oneself; ahimsa, not injuring others by thought, word or deed; anabhitya, not coveting others' goods, not thinking vain thoughts, and not brooding over injuries received from another. This is called Kalyana. This is a most wonderful qualities we have to develop. Every devotee has to develop. So who is a devotee? A devotee is one who loves God. And love is a quality, as Eric Fromm had shown. It doesn't know what is called exclusiveness. Means, if we have that quality called love, I love this person or this thing, but I do not love this person or this thing, you cannot have that kind of exclusiveness. An example, you open your eyes, you are looking at me, hopefully. Sometimes, you know, people develop such wonderful quality. The students, they go on looking, glaring, googling at the teacher, but they are fast asleep inside. You are looking at me. Can you say, I will see only the Swami, but I will not see the light, I will not see the microphone, I will not see anything else? You cannot exclude. So love is such a quality which doesn't know what is called exclusiveness. It loves everything. It loves God, it loves non-God, it loves everything. In the eyes of love, there is nothing which is unlovable. So, that is called truthfulness. What is truthfulness? To love everything. And then arjava, means straightforwardness. I will discuss it in my next class, but I am just giving a foretaste. Arjava means straightforwardness. What is straightforwardness? You appear exactly what as you are, what you appear to be. You appear to be one thing and you are something else. That is not straightforward. That is called crookedness. Now, why we should practice this straightforwardness? You cannot pretend that you are loving. So pretending that you are loving is anything but loving. It is actually a a most heinous quality because you are giving the appearance that you are loving, but actually you are not loving at all. It is deceiving other people. It is such a terrible quality. And in this modern age, this is what we are all specially trained to do that. Bank advertisement. We are here to make money for you. How straightforward they are. I love you, I love you. The husband is sleeping with somebody else. Phone comes. I love you. That's why we ask who suffers, who is going to suffer. If I pretend that I am loving but I do not love, who is the sufferer? The law of karma inevitably comes back to us. It entraps us. If I love, I am a happy person. If I don't love, this is another point we have to understand. If I love, love and happiness are synonymous, two faces. You can't be happy and love and then loving, unloving at the same time. You must be happy, then you love. You love, then you are happy. You don't love, you can't be happy. They go together. That's, if I want to be happy, then what should I do? I must develop love. And I want to be happy. Everyone wants to be happy, is it not? So that is straightforwardness. To develop that quality where we know that straightforwardness is a most desirable quality. And everybody loves straightforwardness. Why do we love babies? Because they're incapable of pretending. Have you ever seen a baby pretending? It's impossible. But we teach them later on in the life. We say that otherwise you cannot survive. You are a fool. You are naive if you go on doing what you pretend to be. No, we will discuss these things in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.